Hello and a very warm welcome to another episode of the Get Football Tactics podcast. I'm your host Neil Sharath, and as always, I'm delighted to say I have been joined by Varun Vasudevan. How are you, Varun?
I'm good. I'm doing well. And I'm a little sad Alex is not there with us. I mean, as weird as it is, I miss his dark, negative energy, creepy, weird vibe. You always need one guy like that in the group. But anyway, I think me and you can manage this one.
Yeah, no Alex for us today, but we're going to be talking about a very interesting topic. And that is, I guess, the main point of discussion, certainly this week, which is Arne Slot and his potential imminent move to Liverpool. So we will look back at his previous work in the Netherlands, of course, mainly focusing on his Feyenoord side, which he's leaving. And then we'll talk about, obviously, his tactics, how he set things up, how he likes to operate, his strengths and weaknesses, and of course the big question, which is how we think he will translate to Liverpool and how he can succeed Klopp, because that is the big job for him, and I guess perhaps one of the toughest jobs out there right now, one would think. So without further ado, I'd say let's get started. Let's start with a quick background on Slot. He was formerly a player, a midfielder, as many managers turn out to be. He spent all his time in the Netherlands playing for a few clubs, FC Zwolle, NAC Breda, Sparta Rotterdam, and PEC Zwolle. And he hung up his boots in 2013, and he soon enough moved to Cambuur. First, I believe he worked in the youth academy, and then soon enough he joined as an assistant coach of the first team coaching staff. And then after the manager left, he sort of became like a co-coach with another guy who I haven't heard of ever since. So I don't know what he's up to. But basically, Slot was, the way we will talk about his work at Cambuur is he was sort of the head coach in a short spell, and he did well. He took them to their first ever Dutch Cup final, I believe. So they didn't end up winning. They lost on AZ to penalties, and funnily enough, he next moved to AZ. He joined them again, first as I believe an assistant coach to the first team head coach, and then after he left, he took over as head coach. Did really well there. I think he only spent maybe less than 2 years there, but in his like full season, whatever the season was, because it got cut short by COVID, he had AZ level on top with Ajax. So in the Eredivisie, of course, they did not restart the season as most other leagues did after like the COVID break. And they didn't sort of, I don't believe they even declared any results. So AZ were level on points, I believe, when it stopped with Ajax at the top. And they very much were in a title charge, which is quite a huge achievement considering the disparity between AZ and Ajax's like budgets. And of course, at that time, Ajax were absolutely dominant, unlike they are right now, which is, I mean, we've covered before, they're in a very different state right now. And then so after AZ, he moved to Feyenoord, where he's been since. And again, he's done really well. He won just their second league title since the turn of the century in the 22-23 season. In his first season there, he, of course, took them to third, which was a decent recovery after finishing fifth before he was hired. And this season as well, he has them well on course for second. Of course, he also got to the Europa Conference League final, and again, good knockout runs in the other two seasons as well. His track record really speaks for itself if you just look at it on paper. Even this season, I mean, PSV obviously have run away with the league, but as we covered in our episode, they are significantly overperforming like their underlying numbers. And if you just go by underlying numbers, then it's quite possible that maybe in another season, Feyenoord would be challenging for back-to-back league titles as well. So he's clearly done very well. And I think we should also say that all of this he has done with a relatively limited budget, certainly a lesser budget than his rivals, like we mentioned at AZ. And even when he came at Feyenoord, their financial situation wasn't great. So in like the last three sort of seasons, Feyenoord have spent, I believe it's about 60-70 odd million or maybe close to 80 million on player transfers, and they've brought in well over 100 million. So their net spend I mean, they've basically brought in more money than they've invested in transfers. So that tells you a lot about how well he's done, because even though they've often lost their best players, he's managed to find a way back and, of course, won a league title, which is, like I said, a huge achievement. So now, of course, he's joining Liverpool. And the big question is how he will set up there. So before we dive into the tactics, Varun, any points to add about his previous work?
Yeah, I mean, I think you covered it well. And I just want to touch upon two things, which I think are big factors for why Liverpool are hiring him. As you said, this is a manager with an upward curve. He has been getting tactically better in each of his jobs. He has a very, very good track record of player development. I think that is a very big attraction. I mean, if you just see post his stints, right, at AZ Alkmaar, you just came out with household names, Coop Miners, Owen Wijndal, Calvin Stengs, Myron Bordu, Sugawara, and then some experienced players like Vlaar, Jordi Klaassi, Bruno Martins-Indy, who were the core of the team. And now you're looking at Feyenoord and Santiago Jimenez, Stengs again, Quinton Timber, Kirtrida, Mats Wiefer. I mean, it just feels like, okay, this is a lot of exciting talent, and it is. But it's just a lot of testament to Arne Slot that once he's done what he does, these players seem very attractive. I mean, obviously a lot of credit recruitment, and we'll get to that. But then it always feels like you spend a little bit of time with an Arne Slot team and there's a lot of young, peak, exciting talents who are ready to move up. And I think that's because of how he develops them. And see, I mean, tactically getting better, making the best use of players, and as you said, making really best use of finances. I mean, again, I can understand why a data-led approach made Liverpool go for him. I mean, we'll get into the tactics, which is also a decent sink. But then that whole way in which Liverpool kept pace with Manchester City with a little bit of less spends, right? I mean, they did spend well, but not compared to like a City or a PSG. So again, making good utilization, bringing in those mid-table kind of players or potential kind of players, getting the max out of them, and then maybe selling a few of them and gaining money as well, and keeping everything, you know, in a more upward, getting the value out of things, you know, that kind of cycle. Arne Slot is really good at that. And I think philosophically, that is one reason why he seems attractive to Liverpool. So I think at both stints, to summarize your point, he did put the club, both the clubs in a better state. He'd improved all the players. Tactically, the teams looked better. Team composition-wise, they looked better. And as you said, he's achieved so many things with lesser budgets than his rivals. So all of this is a very positive sign on the outset before even getting into tactics.
Absolutely. And well, let's get into tactics now. Let's start with... well, I think one thing to clarify maybe first is that Slot is not exactly someone who's like entirely wedded to one formation or one structure, because I've seen many people talking about how he loves to use a 4-2-3-1 and that's all he does. And I mean, that is true in the case of his lineups, but in terms of the shapes his team takes up both in and out of possession, things vary a fair bit. So I mean, like, if you take, for example, a Roberto De Zerbi, for example, then you know you're going to get that deep and close double pivot to build out and stuff. With Slot, a lot varies depending on both the players he's got, I mean, in his squad and also in his starting lineup, and also, of course, the opposition and how they're setting up. So he's...
I think there's that... these last few years has seen that era of Dutch coaches or Eredivisie coaches, which really like to mix all those things. Like, you can't pick any of them and say they're a super possession-based coach or they're a super pressing-based coach. And, you know, they like to mix all those things. And by the end of his evolution in the Eredivisie, Slot feels like a nice mix of everything. You know, there's a bit of a total football vibe to him, but also we can also get physical. We can also press. So, I mean, it's one style of Dutch coaches that is emerging. Erik ten Hag also kind of was a bit like that. At a superficial level, we'll get into differences. But yeah, I mean, so I guess in that sense, it's a little typical of what is happening in the Dutch football scene.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, that's one big outlier. His name is Peter Bosch. But apart from him, that is true. So yeah, let's get started with Slot's tactics. Let's start with the in-possession stuff, actually, even though we have it late in the doc, because I think this really highlights the sort of fluidity is not exactly the right word, but basically the willingness to change and tweak stuff that we mentioned. So there's a lot. I mean, there's no one fixed shape you can associate with him, like a 2-3-2-3, 3-2-4-1, whatever. You'll see everything from a 2-3-2-3, 3-2-4-1, even like a loose 2-4-4 sometimes. And again, the main priority is to get the right player profiles in the right roles, depending on what's available, of course. There's some core principles. For example, he always likes to use like high and wide wingers to stretch opponent defenses. And of course, like again, like having nice dribbly players there is really good. So like Igor Pasha is a good example of one. And then he also really, he always likes to have a line leading striker, as it were, so someone who's trying to play on the shoulder of the last defender, can run onto through balls, or of course get on the end of crosses and cutbacks. And of course, we see that with Santiago Jimenez right now, scoring loads and loads of goals for the last 2 years almost. So those are a few of his like core principles, especially in his sort of front three, how he wants to set them up. But the rest is really fluid. So like his base structure to build up changes a lot. Like we saw, like, you know, even if you just think about those shapes, those are all very different. And there's, I mean, that comes from a lot of things. So one, for example, is the fullback roles, with especially with Lucharel Getroida. He gets a lot of flexibility from him because he's someone who can like stay deep and form a back three or invert into midfield. And then on the left, I think Quincy Hartman is his first choice right now. And again, he's someone who can like advance inside or out wide. So you get a lot of fluidity from his fullbacks, and they, I would say, are like the main ones who sort of decide what sort of shape they're taking. But again, it can even change like within a match or within even different phases of progression. And yeah, I mean, generally their intention overall, if I had to say something, is to progress the ball on the ground rather than like circulate too much. So it's not like a Pep Guardiola or Mikel Arteta teams who are very happy to circulate around the back and then, you know, gradually get forward. Slots Feyenoord do look for those incisive line-breaking passes more than the average possession-based team might. But yeah, so they're, I would say they're, I mean, obviously they have really high possession averages in the Eredivisie because, I mean, there's a big gap between the top teams and the rest. Like, I'm pretty sure it's over 60%. But if I had to say what their priority is, I would say dominating territory is more important to them than dominating possession. And so they also have a really good counter press to support this fast progression, because if you lose the ball, you want to win it back and sort of keep that territory. So yeah, those are a few things I would say about his in-possession tactics. Varun, what do you have to add?
Yeah, I mean, I think you covered it well. And I could probably summarize it as his philosophy seems to be to progress swiftly and whatever is required. I mean, third man combinations in central areas, very quick switches of play, getting wingers 1v1, getting a striker in the box. So these are the kind of end results that the progression aims at. And it can be very quick when required, as you said. Like, for example, when Orkun Kokcu was there at the club, he would often drop deep and the back three or the back four will pass a bit with him. And once they attract that first line of press, you'll immediately see one really nice switch or long ball or even a chip or a through ball, which Kokcu plays to, you know, the front four, and which bypasses like four or five opponents. And then you are in that 3v3 or 4v4 kind of situation. And the attack can do what they do best. So these are the kind of moments that they build up to. And it keeps, as you said, it is very flexible. Like, for example, at AZ Alkmaar, he had a different striker. Myron Badu was often playing striker. And at times when he would be the central attacker, he would drop deep and form like a situational diamond. You know, and there wouldn't be an out-and-out striker, but the wingers would start getting in 1v1. And they would have like a 4v2 in the middle of the park because of the diamond and then play a winger in. Whereas at Feyenoord, with someone like Santiago Jimenez, it's a bit more okay, we have a very, very good box threat. We have a very good goal threat. Let's funnel the attacks towards him. Let's use the wingers in a more dynamic fashion to create openings with their dribbling or their passing. And let's try and get this front three in very good positions because of our build-up and progression. So that's the aim. And as you said, it doesn't have to be very retention-based. It ends up being that way because they are the dominant team. But the idea is to progress quickly. Like Mats Wiefer, for example, this season, post Kokcu departing, he's been really good with that forward pass. And you just know after a few passes, there'll be that one moment where Mats Wiefer is facing forward and one of the wingers or the striker or just, you know, they have that space and they're breaking away and he plays that really nice through ball or switch or forward pass that gets them in. And then from there, you know what's going to happen. There's going to be one dynamic dribble and then a cutback or a cross and a finish. Something fun is going to happen. So in that sense, they're pretty exciting. They're very forward-minded. And the constant approach is whatever the build-up structure is, whether it's 2-4, 3-2, whatever it is, how can we just attract a bit of the opponents, create that space, and then start hitting that and get into advantageous situations for our attackers. And that will change depending on who the attackers are. But his main idea is, how can I get them in their best qualities? If they're a dribbler, how can I get them 1v1 versus a fullback? If they're a striker, how can I get them good quality chances on the edge of the box? So that way, he plays to the strengths of players while having a very, very forward-minded approach in possession.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's spot on. And that really sums up his approach as a whole, because, I mean, like you say, it's heavily dependent on the players. So like what you see at Feyenoord is not necessarily what you'll see at Liverpool. So yeah, just a couple of quick stats to back something up. I think what's gone underrated about Feyenoord this season in the Eredivisie, especially because PSV are scoring like 100 goals, is like, if you look at the underlying numbers, actually Feyenoord have been the best attacking team and also significantly improved from their title winning season. So last season, cumulatively in the league, they didn't even cross like 70 expected goals. This season, they're already past 80. And they also have the best chance quality average, so NPXG per shot, at 0.13, which is, yeah, I mean, pretty high. So whatever metric you look at, they are very good attacking team in terms of chance creation, which is, of course, I think the main thing you can ask from a coach's point of view while assessing attacking play.
I mean these are very good examples to show how the team improves as it spends more time with him. Like, as you said, they look better this season than last year, and only because of Peter Bosz's PSV running away, it's not being highlighted. But because he was settling into Feyenoord, you know, just adjusting the first few tactics, the start of the season especially, he was figuring things out. They really couldn't amass that kind, but this time with a bit more settled approach. Again, I would say start of the season, because of some new players coming in, some Kokcu went out, new players coming in, figuring it out. Those few months weren't like super, they didn't start really great, because of which PSV went flying. But then overall across the season, you can see the result of the tactics being well drilled. And I mean, it's a good sign. A coach spending time with his team and only showing improvement, it's a good sign.
Absolutely. And I think we'll get onto that more when we talk about how his fit is to Liverpool, because like you say, he's not someone who's necessarily going to, you know, come in and have a crazy instant impact. But in the long run, he's someone who's consistently shown across his clubs improvements and progression. So yeah, I think that's all we'll dig into for the attacking play, because especially in this respect, as you've discussed, I don't think it's worth getting too deep into the details of what they do at Feyenoord, because with a whole different set of players at Liverpool, you'll see something completely different. But yeah, I mean, these are the principles that you should expect, which he will follow throughout, because that's what he's done throughout his career. So now let's dive into their out of possession stuff. I think this is where things get interesting, because this is where, I think both of us discussed this before recording, but this is where our main question mark or concern is with Slot. And of course, this is the phase of play which, I mean, generally will remain much more constant across clubs. So yeah, let's get into it. If we talk about Feyenoord's approach in broad terms, they're a fairly intense and proactive high-pressing teams, especially in the Eredivisie. They consistently put up, you know, if not best, but then top two, top three pressing numbers in the league, whether that's high turnovers, PPDA, whatever. And what you see, again, is this flexibility and variations in their approaches depending on the opposition. Now, when I say approaches, I mean both shapes and also their intention in terms of how they're pressing, how they're setting traps. So one rotation you see often in a 4-2-3-1 is that their player markings through midfield. So that's generally against teams playing a 4-3-3. And then the striker will make a curved run to press and sort of invite a central pass, like keep the lane open. And of course, with the player marking in midfield, the idea is to sort of turn over there and trap the opposition there. Then other times you may even see a 4-4-2, in which case the front two is generally relatively close. They're like screening the opposition's number six or number sixes and forcing them to build out wide, use the fullbacks. And then when they go out to the fullback, the winger will jump to initiate the press out wide. Of course, use the touchline as an extra defender. I mean, it's a pretty common variation, but that's a different way to press within Feyenoord. Sometimes, especially maybe sometimes in big games where their opponent has a lot of quality and they know that pressing them can have risks, they'll also just like sit in a high block. Again, whether it's a 4-4-2 or a 4-2-3-1, depending on how they want to set up in midfield. And sort of wait for mistakes and press more selectively, but they will sit high. So it's not like they'll sink into a low block. They will try and keep a high line and keep the ball, you know, as far away from the goal as possible. So, I mean, there still is some element of pressure maintained. And recently, I think, especially this season, we've also seen them dabbling or even more consistently adopting a hybrid press approach. Now, quickly to explain what a hybrid press is, it's basically a mixture of a player-oriented and a zonal press. So what you'll have is, you'll have all your players, I mean, you'll have a good deal of fixed player marking, but of course the big issue with pressing is that you're always working with a numerical disadvantage as the pressing team, right? Because the opposition has their goalkeeper, who is an extra player effectively, because it's 10 on 10 in the outfield, and then they have a plus one. And also generally, you keep an extra player in the back line. So if they have like a striker, you have your two center backs on the striker. Or like if it's a front three, you have a back four keeping a watch on them. So you also have a disadvantage, that advantage in the back line translates to a disadvantage in the front line. So the idea of hybrid, so if you just do pure player marking, then the opposition always has at least one free player, if not two. And they can easily, I mean, yeah, if you type like extreme player marking today, you are probably going to get played through. So the idea of hybrid pressing is to mix these elements of a zonal press and a player-oriented press by having certain players in hybrid marking roles, in which they like start by marking one player, and when a press is triggered, they jump to another player. So quite often what you see is in a midfielder, maybe they start on the number eight, and then the striker starts in front of the opposition's number six. And then when the striker jumps to press, the midfielder jumps onto the number six to make sure they cannot freely receive. So that's a very basic idea. Of course, it gets more complicated in cases. But in Feyenoord's case, we generally see this sort of an approach in like a 4-1-3-2 structure. And in the Eredivisie, it's been all right. It's been pretty good. But there have been weaknesses in these jumps that we speak of, like in the shift of these player roles when the press is triggered, which I feel can be exploited. And we've especially seen that in Europe. We'll get into that a bit later, maybe, especially when we talk about, again, how this translates to Liverpool. But I wonder what thoughts you have on that, Varun.
Yeah, I mean, largely agree with a lot of what you said. I think one of the reasons why I think Liverpool are going for Arne Slot is because the high press is good. The high press is good. Structurally, as you said, they have a lot of good ideas. And to be fair, even when they sit in a block and they wait for mistakes, when they're more organized, they are pretty well drilled, well organized. It's in those shifts and changes, those transition moments, where, as you said, there are a lot of doubts. I would say more so, you asked me before, which transitions do you mean, Varun? Do you mean the ones which happened due to build-up mistakes, that is turnovers, or do you mean the ones where the high press is bypassed? I think both are valid, but what is more concerning is the high press ones, that once a press fails, how is the team coping, right? Basically, your S defense structure and how you're defending transitions. And here, I think we have seen a few mistakes. Some of it is also player-centric, and I like the tweaks Arne Slot has been attempting in recent years. As you said, one is he is trying a hybrid approach. Some players stay zonal. They all don't go man-to-man. They all don't go intensely ahead. As you said, a man-to-man press sometimes can be played through if the opponent build-up and progression is good, or if they have some skilled players who can beat their men. So I think to avoid this, he has been trying hybrid approaches. He's also been doing some other player-related tweaks. I think at one point of time, with Mats Wiefer and Quinton Timber in the pivot, none of them are a proper holding number six. And I think when Zerouki was bought this year, I think he's a bit more, a little bit better at being good at positioning. And I think in Champions League games and in some big games, he tried like a 4-3-3 with Zerouki as the number six and Wiefer and Timber as the number eight. So to circumvent the problem of central transitions or being weak in the center, when at times Wiefer and Quinton Timber are very front foot, you know, in their approach, in their defensive approach, he deployed three players. I still wouldn't say any of them are like a proper, you know, number six. But then these are some tweaks he's been trying. So he's trying to use the strengths of the players to block the center, at least, especially when it comes to transition, especially when the midfielders, especially in the number eights, they step up. So I don't think he's been trying, but as you said, the big problem is the Eredivisie simply does not give us enough data. It doesn't happen often. We have talked about this when we spoke about Erik ten Hag at Ajax, or when we spoke about PSV's boss, you know. And I mean, Peter Bosch is someone whom we know does not have a great rest defense, right? Like, I mean, we have spoken about that, and he's running away with the league. And Ten Hag also ran away with the league while having a very questionable rest defense. So that'll always be a question mark. This doesn't mean Arne Slot is going to be bad. I would say it just means we don't know. We don't know. He's only managed in clubs in the Eredivisie, and the Eredivisie simply is not very threatening in transitions. The Premier League is very, very transition smart. All the bottom half teams, any team, I mean, you name it, even Wolves, Sheffield, etc., they can be very smart in transition. We recently saw the United Sheffield game, and Sheffield can do that. You know, they can, that's the worst team in the league, and they have had a terrible season, and even they are very, very capable in transitions. They can have those really smart dribbles and passes through the center and get their team 3v3 against a very good team, you know, a very good opponent. So that'll be tested very, very rigorously in the Premier League. And I think Slot has shown a few ideas. The problem is we don't know how these ideas will scale and how quickly he can come up with more ideas. So yeah, I'd probably stop there.
Yeah, that is certainly a question we will get into, but I guess first let's also talk about some of his like off-pitch track record, which you alluded to earlier. But of course, beyond tactics, there's a few other things which Liverpool value. One of them, of course, being youth development. You list off a few names, and I mean, if you talk about Liverpool, Jurgen Klopp has probably, I would say, the best track record, especially this season, definitely any manager in like the top clubs in the Premier League, maybe even Europe. Although Barcelona have exceptionally talented academy graduates, but then they also use them like, I mean, it's insane how much they like just a bar exploit of them. Soap. Yeah, like I was gonna say bar of soap, but like it's even worse than that. They just exploit them, and then after 2 years they keep getting injured. So yeah, in terms of management, I would then argue that Klopp and Liverpool have been the best. So that's very important for Liverpool, and that's another aspect where we see Slot as a good fit, a similar match. I think maybe this is what goes a bit underrated, because obviously with like Michael Edwards back, everyone's talking about how Liverpool are doing, you know, data hire, whatever, they're looking at data and hiring a interesting coach. But this is also equally important, beyond just the similarities in playing style and metrics and all that, this emphasis on youth development and what you mentioned again, Varun, the individual player development and management, because you will need that at Liverpool. So I think you've got a few more examples of that.
Yeah, so let's get into this. I really love this side of Arne Slot. And the good news is we have content. We have content on it. We have the stories. I mean, Kökçü was one example. He apparently was someone who struggled to take a lot of instructions all at once. And Arne Slot reduced extra duties off him and let him play it in a more organic role. Let him do what he does best, right? And he did not use his usual long set of instructions for Kökçü. And Kökçü later said that really helped him. And so he has these very individually tailored tweaks, and we saw Kökçü doing really well. And same thing for Luis Sinistra, who was not in a great form before Arne Slot took over, and then he had a very good phase under Slot. Both the players flourished, and so many young players like Malasia, Gitrida. So a few more examples. He also works very closely with his data team, with his medical team, and they do a lot of player analysis before they buy the player, right after they bought the player in the first few months. So, for example, in Mats Wiefer's case, the fitness staff found out that he had irregular muscle development with lesser body mass in the upper body. So he was put on an intensive regime to develop upper body strength and getting him in rhythm in order to perform the role that Arne Slot wanted. And that's why he had a bit of a slow start the first few months. But these last 1.5 years, especially this season, post-Kökçü going, Wiefer just really burst into life. And the second half of last season, he looks like a machine. And a lot of physical conditioning work was done using data. Santiago Jimenez, again, his runs were studied by the analyst team in his previous stint back in Mexico, how he runs the channels, his shooting technique, and they found scopes of improvement in his running and shooting patterns, and he was put on individual drills to work over that the moment he came to the club. Quentin Timber's movement was also studied, and Arne Slot initially thought he was a single pivot defender, but then he was really good further up the pitch. So they tweaked his profile, and as I said, they tried to make a pivot out of him and Wiefer, and then they tried to put him in a three with Zerouki. So he has been tweaking his role as well. So, and I think these are the kind of things, as you said, Edwards-led Liverpool would really love. You know, Slot sitting with the analyst team, the fitness team, and focusing on players, helping them develop and getting the most out of them, you know. And I think that's a big reason why he is one of the candidates. He's the main candidate.
Yeah, and I think, again, those points you mentioned, be it the sort of working with the recruitment teams and the analysis team, fitness team, blah, blah, is again another, like you said, very important point, which Edwards, especially with Edwards coming back, Liverpool will really value. So whether that's having these analysis sessions focused on players, or also with like the recruitment team in terms of signing, making new signings, getting the right sort of players which he wants. So I think this works both ways, right? Like one is Slot is sort of doing this and he's working well with these teams, but also these teams are supporting him and helping both his teams and his style of play develop really well. I think that's also especially true in the case of the recruitment team with like the new signings they get. So I forgot
one more example, like in Gitrida's case. I think he gave this interview after their win against Ajax, the 2-3-1, which sealed the league. And he was called a team leader by Arne Slot. And in his interview, he said that he credited everything to Slot, saying that he helped him with his battle with his introverted nature and fear of communication due to stammering. So he had a stammer when he was young and he wasn't able to communicate well. And Slot said he's a team leader, and Gitrida gave him complete credit. So, I mean, it's just these really nice individual stories which come out regarding Slot.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, yeah, like when you consider all of that, it does look quite promising for Liverpool. Now, I guess let's dive into it. You do have, Varun, in the doc, a section called Differences from Erik ten Hag. They aren't the same because they're Dutch and bald. So do you want to quickly expand on that before we dive into...
Yeah, I mean, I won't I won't take too much time on this, but I think a lot of people are not giving Slot a chance because of the Ten Hag transition.
I mean, they're very unserious people, I have to say.
I know. I mean, just because he's bald and Dutch, I mean, come on, guys. Let's think a bit more than that. And I mean, fine, there are reservations because of the Eredivisie, as we said. But then there are differences between both managers. Ten Hag was very player-centric. Like we mentioned, Slot tweaking tactics for players. In my opinion, Ten Hag's basis for tactics is players. Like he's very, very player-dependent. And from Utrecht to Ajax to United, he had very different systems that were tuned to the players and the club he was at. Arne Slot isn't that player-centric. Like, yes, he loves to get the best out of them, tailor stuff to them, but he has very, very strong ideas on how his team should play. And these are squad-wide. These are pattern-based. You see repeated patterns in the attacking third. You see repeating patterns in the build-up phase. You see very, very solid press structures. It's not as dynamic and fluid as, you know, relying on players to punch your way through build-up, or relying on players to create, or relying on players to win their 1v1s across the pitch and come out strong, which I think is a bit where he differs from Ten Hag, and why probably Ten Hag is struggling a bit more in the Premier League. So I think slightly, I mean, yeah, as we said, defensively, it could all, you know, get torn apart, and the defending transitions issue comes up here too. But I think there is a difference in philosophy in terms of being a bit more philosophy-centric or pattern-centric and less player-centric compared to Ten Hag. So I think that's one difference I wanted to highlight between them.
Yeah, I guess let's now get into his fit at Liverpool and what we think things might pan out like, and just what we think of the move in general. Personally, I think the first thing that sprung to my mind with this move, obviously it's been linked for a while, is the fact that stylistically, I think Slot is the closest match you get to Klopp within like the reasonable hiring pool, right? Like of managers who are currently in charge of clubs at, you know, a decent level from where a step up to Liverpool is not insane. I mean, I would say like Feyenoord is sure towards the edge of it. Like if you're at even a mid-table Eredivisie club, jump to Liverpool is probably too big. So I'm not considering people there. But like in terms of the top managers in the top European leagues and even like mid-table managers in the big leagues, I think Slot is the stylistically most similar coach to Klopp, be it just in terms of like tactical principles, such as like the ideas we spoke of about, you know, fast progression, creating a lot of chances, not necessarily circulating too much, deep, counter-pressing, of course. And also in terms of just his coaching style, like we mentioned about the examples Warren gave of individual development or finding this balance between, you know, getting the best out of player roles and player profiles while maintaining a good system and a fixed system overall. And we see that with Klopp as well, like in terms of the shift he's made from, you know, the last few seasons to especially this season, in terms of like the overall system, in order to ensure that he can get the most out of the players he has in the squad. So when you think of all that, I think stylistically, this is the best match you can get to Klopp. And clearly that's something Liverpool want to value, both in terms of making the transition as easy as possible. I mean, obviously it's not going to be easy, but as much as possible. And also the off-pitch stuff is really important as well. Not just in terms of like utilizing the analysis teams and all that, but also especially youth development, because that's again something they really value. I mean, they have a great academy, and it's also all set up in a way that they can feed into the senior team really well. So they want to have a manager who can utilize that. So from all those points, it's pretty positive. Of course, there's a few concerns, but I think Warren, do you have something to add before that?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't bring up Arne Slot when we were discussing Liverpool managers. And I think that's the difference, right? Like, I mean, even when you do a data-led player scouting approach, right? Like when I recently did it for United, you'll always come up with that some nice mid-table player who is a good fit according to the data, but he's probably just not one of the best players in the world, right? I think this is the difference. Like we were going through the best available managers, but if you just look at data, someone like an Arne Slot comes up. And There are merits to this. I really like it. I mean, I am a big fan of a data-led approach. And I genuinely think the way managerial hiring is happening today, this is more important. There is a whole ecosystem to fit into. It's not as simple as just get the best manager. We've seen so many clubs that have failed because they just got a very high-quality manager or a big CV manager, but that manager didn't fit, or the board, the transfers, the playing squad, the youth that are coming through, all of them did not align. So I think this is where I would be a little more positive about a data-led hire. Aneslot is not like the best manager in the world. He's only been in the Eredivisie, which is why when you say who are the best possible options, he's not in the top three. But then because he fits so well in the system, I think then, you know, even if your manager isn't like Pep Guardiola, it can still work, you know. I think like Eddie Howe with Newcastle was one decent example. No one was saying Eddie Howe is in the top three managers in the world, right? But again, he just fit with what Newcastle wanted to do. So I think these kind of hires are probably a little better than just going out and getting the best guy possible. And coming to Liverpool, I mean, we've spoken about a few things. I think one tactical element is on how Arne Slot loves to focus on zone 14. Zone 14 is basically, I mean, to explain it in vocal terms, the attacking midfielder area, that pitch, you know, just outside the box, centrally, that space where, you know, your attacking midfielder in a 4-2-3-1 will roam around, right? That's zone 14. And lot of patterns of Slot involve a cut back to zone 14 or occupancy in zone 14. And he loves allowing his players to take long shots from that area. He doesn't like it when it's from further than that or from random angles. But when they start coming into the central zones, even if it's outside the box, he likes his players to take shots. I think this specifically aligns with Liverpool very well. They have a lot of good long shooters. They have a lot of good players who can progress and get into those zones. And I think they'll really enjoy that part of the freedom that Arne Slot will give them. I think fullback roles, you spoke about them being very dynamic. Like he has every fullback role in the book in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years of management. The fullback that tucks into the back, into the defense line, the fullback that inverts into the pivot, the fullback that goes into the half space like an attacking midfielder, the fullback that goes wide like a winger. He's done all of them, you know, and depending on the tactic. Yes, his preference is to invert fullbacks and let wingers go wide. But in many cases, he also allows the fullback to go wide and a winger to tuck in. And again, this really goes well with Trent. I mean, if you're looking at the key players and how they fit, Trent Alexander-Arnold inverting into midfield so that his winger occupies the width, that really works with him. But Robertson does require replacing, so it depends on who the left back is or who gets converted. But Slot can go both ways. He can have a Robertson, peak Robertson type left back who's offering width and allows, you know, Nunes or Gakpo or someone to come inside. He can also invert from there as well, with both fullbacks inverting. So that flexibility is there. And I think that all these things really help Liverpool and the key players that they already have.
Yeah, absolutely. I think on the whole, it is, you know, clearly most signs are positive. And to circle back to what you said about like the episode we did for Liverpool successors, I mean, obviously the big names like Xabi Alonso, for example, I still think that probably, only him, because he was our clear first choice. That probably
Nagelsmann was a good idea too.
Nagelsmann was also good, but I think so. But
they've all said no.
Personally, I would say, yeah, I mean, obviously he said no, but even like if there was a choice, like Alonso would still be my clear number one. But then between Nagelsmann and Slot, I can see arguments for both, because obviously Nagelsmann has a more proven track record at the top level, very good tactician. But in terms of just the stylistic transition, a Slot is a much better fit. I mean, even like just purely stylistically, he's closer to Klopp than even Xabi Alonso, right? So from that perspective, between Nagelsmann and Slot, I can see reason to take both. So yeah, for me, like Alonso is the number one, clear. But yeah,
another way to look at this is after Alonso and Nagelsmann both said they weren't going to move.
Yeah, I mean, my third choice was Thomas Frank. So to be honest, they've done.
Let's not go there.
Yeah, fair enough, Lou. I mean, they know a thing or two what they're doing. So yeah, fair enough.
I think the big candidate in between was Amorim, right? We spoke a lot about that. And I think there's a good example to prove, like, between Anislot and Amorim. If you purely look at the data stuff, the tactical stuff, Slot is a much, much better fit, right? I mean,
Amorim is a whole complete different direction.
Yeah, exactly. You then invest in a very, very new process, which will take time and which will take a lot of team building. Whereas with Anislot, I can actually see the exact same team fit into a Slot tactic, and then you do these few tweaks. You don't even need too many transfers. I mean, how many transfers do Liverpool need? Probably a midfielder and probably a left-sided defender, right? And other than that, they pretty much if Salah leaves, then a right winger, right? So yeah. But they also have a lot of youth. I mean, I'm pretty sure if you count 4 or 5 gaps in a 20-man squad, right, which Slot has to either replace or upgrade on, 2 or 3 can be covered through a youth signing, through a youth development, you know, like someone coming in through the youth channels or any one of the youngsters that they have currently. And then 2 or 3 can be bought. So with minimal effort, like 2-3 signings is nothing. Liverpool earn enough. They can have a 100 million window, right? They earn enough for that. So imagine 2 signings and 2 youth promotions, and you pretty much have them on a title challenging level potentially. As you said, Slot takes a bit of time, so maybe the first season won't literally be a title challenging level, but you can really expect, if things go according to plan and if an Edwards led system is doing the recruitment right and everyone's in alignment, literally the second year of Arne Slot at Liverpool can be a title year. So you can see that process with Amorim or Thomas Frank or anyone else. It would be very tough to say, you know what, 2 signings and a bit of time and second year is a title challenge. It would be very tough to say that. So I think that is what Edwards and his team are thinking when they're doing this.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I think before we even get into the potential weaknesses, mainly the sort of transition defending stuff, let's discuss this as well, because I think it's an interesting point. How do you see the sort of transition in terms of, from Slot's point of view as well, in terms of like expectations? Because right now Liverpool are in a really interesting place. They're obviously obviously succeeding Klopp is at the same level immediately is basically impossible. I think everyone appreciates that. But many are saying, especially with all their title charges are basically falling off. They're out of the Europa League and basically out of the Premier League title race at this point. Some people are saying that with this sort of an end, maybe whoever comes in next, it'll be a bit easier, as opposed to, you know, if they won the Premier League, maybe there would be more expectation. But to be honest, for me, I think there's not that big a difference, simply because of the fact that they have been in the title race for this long. And as we discussed in our Liverpool episode, like, looking at the preseason, no one reasonably expected them to even get this far, right? So they have overachieved. In the bigger picture this season, I would still say they have overachieved. And so, combine that with the fact that Liverpool fans will always have very high expectations, especially on the back of recent successes, I don't think it will be that easy. And especially because, again, we mentioned, Slot isn't someone who's going to come in and make an instant impact. He needs time to get used to stuff and understand players and profiles and everything to get, you know, the best out of them. So when you put all that together, I actually do think his first season could get a bit shaky. What do you think?
I'm in between on this. On one hand, I don't think it's, as you said, I don't think it's super easy. But I also don't think it's super crazy tough. Like, if you see Liverpool's underlyings, they're third in the league. If you saw their preseason predictions, like anyone sensible would have said, they should be third after Arsenal and City. Their squad quality is about third in terms of what the squad is. They have a better squad than Chelsea, Newcastle, Aston Villa, Manchester United, Tottenham. and that will be true next year too. So I think he starts off with a bit of that safety that this is definitely the third best team in the league. And I don't think it will be that tough to maintain top four. I don't think they drop to fifth or sixth unless Anislas had a really bad start. So
that's a really good point, actually, come to think of it. Because maybe if like the likes of Tottenham, Chelsea, Manchester United were in a stronger position where Liverpool even dropping off a bit would, you know, drop them out of top four, top five, like out of Champions League spots, then maybe it actually gets real, like properly shaky. But yeah, I mean, you're right. I think even if they underperform, they're not dropping out of top
three. I mean, we actually felt this is overperformance, right? And Liverpool are punching above their weight. They have a few squad gaps and Klopp's system this year did not even look super sustainable to me. Like, it is a bit too direct and he's just gone like a few years back to when it was a bit more gung-ho direct and counter-pressing. And it just works because it's like the last throw of the dice, the last Klopp year. So thematically, emotionally, it works. To an extent. I mean, it didn't work to the extent where they won everything in sight. But I would still say, even if you see them in Europe, they are sixth for underlying numbers. They are sixth for XGD per 90. Arsenal City, Bayern Munich, Inter and Leverkusen. That's it. Literally just the title leaders everywhere or the ones that have done absolutely brilliant are the only ones ahead of them. So I think the squad is there. There is not a big fear. I think Slot comes into a bit of comfort. Like his job, it's not like taking over Manchester United. Let me say that, okay? United have top four ambitions, top four resources, and probably a top four squad, but they are messed up in so many ways that you know they can have a bad year and finish seventh, right? That fear is there. That real danger is there. And I would say the same for Chelsea, obviously. Chelsea, even if they get top six again, I will be surprised next year. Newcastle, there was always that danger. No matter how their transfers go, it doesn't really scream top three. And you knew, we did predict that they might have injury issues this year and just derail the season. Aston Villa, Tottenham, they're figuring things out. They've had a good year. They're figuring things out. So I think Slot comes in with the right amount of comfort and the right amount of challenge. The comfort in knowing he will get third or fourth as long as he does anything sensible, and the right amount of challenge knowing he just needs that little bit of player improvement, tactical improvement, working on his tactical gaps and working on the players to then jump to second or potentially first. So I think it's a nice place to be in. Enough comfort and enough challenge.
Yeah, that's a really good description, actually. I would agree with that. I guess let's finally discuss the point we've been sort of putting off for the end, which is the potential weakness in terms of the defending transitions. And like you alluded to, broadly speaking, we can even divide defending transitions into two times. One is like after turnovers, so that's more rest defense stuff, which is fine. I think, again, like you mentioned, in the Eredivisie, you don't get nearly the same level of, you know, difficulty in terms of how opponents test it as the Premier League. So it's always difficult to predict. But I mean, just theoretically, I think that is fine. Not a big concern. They have a good counter press as well, which I think will do well enough in the Premier League. My main concern is with their pressing and the potential weakness that I mentioned, in especially their hybrid approach, which is probably going to have to be the way to go in the Premier League. Because again, there's a big jump in quality of opponents in terms of, you know, how good they are at building up. Because most Premier League teams, maybe you ignore like the relegation battlers, but above them, certainly top half, and even maybe to like some outliers in the bottom half, like, Bournemouth maybe, are all really, really good at building up, both tactically and with the individual players they have. I'm not saying anything particularly genius when I say that player quality in the Premier League is much better than in the Eredivisie. So with all of that in mind, pressing is obviously much more difficult in the Premier League than the Eredivisie. And if we are seeing potential gaps in, To be honest, I haven't seen that many gaps in the editability, but I think the place where I found this like potential issue most clear was in their Europa League tie against Roma. And mind you, this was a Roma team which was not in the best of places, right? Because I think it was right after Mourinho left, and maybe for the first leg, De Rossi had just come in, like it was his second or third game or something. And even then, you could see the weaknesses in Feyenoord's press in the hybrid. Like Roma could play through their center, through their like central midfielders, to the point where soon enough, Feyenoord basically just sat in a block and didn't really press them, because these weaknesses were exploitable. So I think that is the big question mark. And obviously, if you take, I mean, if like you mentioned when we were discussing this, his teams are also pretty good at defending in a block. But if that's their primary defensive approach, it becomes tougher to impose yourself on games. So I think this is an area of concern. I'm not saying it's like a clear weakness. I know Yaz is going to go badly, but I think it is a big question mark. And I certainly think there is potential for this weakness to be highlighted. What do you think?
Yeah, I kind of agree to what you said. And you came at it from one angle. I'm going to now give you another angle. If you just look at Liverpool, both offensively and defensively, I went through all their stats on FBref. FBref, that's what it's called.
We have no one to dispute that fact. Pure facts.
Thankfully. These are the times it's good Alex isn't around. But yeah, I mean, I went through all their underlying numbers and they are consistently top three for everything, right? City, Arsenal, Liverpool. City, Arsenal, Liverpool. It's just typically that. But there are two or three stats that are way, way off. Way, way off. And one is, if you go into opponent stats of shooting, the shot quality, and Liverpool are bang mid-table. They're 11th for shot quality, right? This means that they do give their opponents a good quality chance now and then. Obviously, the number of shots, again, is in top three. The total XG is in top three. So they're really good at preventing shots and overall XG. But then when they do give it, the shot quality is a little high. Another data point is if you go into shot creation types of opponents, everything else is in, as I said, the top three again. Shots created from take-ons, and Liverpool are 7th worst. So basically, opponents create a lot from take-ons, basically dribbles, a shot followed by a dribble, right? And Liverpool have that weakness. So if you combine these two, it does say there is a transition defense issue. There are times when opponents break through with a carry, they break through with a take-on, and the shot that they create is a decent high-quality shot. So if you put both together, you can even imagine the scene play out, where sometimes in Liverpool are higher up the pitch, and there's an opponent who gets through in a 2v2 and breaks through the center with a dribble, and then is able to create a good quality chance because they're exposed in their S defense. So I do think that is one issue Liverpool have had. Combining it to what you said.
And quickly, sorry to interrupt, but you know, while you were saying this, I was just actually looking up Feyenoord stats this season. And would you look at that? So in XGA, they're the best in the league, lowest XGA.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of shot quality allowed, they are 9th, which is exact mid-table again. So that's, I think, a common issue actually we see.
Exactly. That's what I was getting at. You explained the Feyenoord issue. I explained the Liverpool issue, and there's a commonality there. And that is, I think, the one red flag, as you said. Some of it is player-related. I don't think Liverpool have replaced Fabinho yet. I did find it odd that they just kept buying number 8s. They bought like 4 number 8s in a row. And McAllister is doing an incredible... Endo, McAllister, they're doing incredible jobs in a defensive midfielder role. And credit to them. But those moments, there are these moments when it becomes clear that they are actually not defensive midfielders, right? They are not the kind of players you literally want ahead of the centre-backs shielding. So I do think Liverpool need a player of that time. Or I don't know, does Slot keep working on McAllister and make him that player long-term? I'm not sure. One solution could be player-related. Slot has shown that solution by moving Zerouki to number 6 and playing two number 8s ahead of him, so that when they do the pressing step up, the proactive defending step up, they have some cover for it. He might do that here. Will he run a 4-3-3 and a solid number 6? I don't know. Will that be a new player or McAllister? I don't know. Another one is, as you said, rely a bit more on hybrid pressing and mid block instead of a very, very aggressive high press. Rely a bit more on an organized setup and having more zonal schemes so that players aren't caught out, they aren't left ahead, and they aren't leaving too much space behind. That might be a tactical way to solve it, or a combination of both. So yeah, these are potential solutions. It's just that he hasn't done enough in the Eredivisie to show that he has the nailed-on solution. As you said, the stats still show that that is a gap. And the Eredivisie hasn't tested it enough for us to know that it's not a big problem. And Liverpool have that existing problem already. And the Premier League, the opponents that they'll face in the Premier League all have strengths to make that problem big. So from all four angles, there is a bit of alignment on why this is an issue. And I think I'm just going to say slot success at Liverpool will probably rest a lot on this issue. I'm pretty confident his attacking, his pressing, when they get in an organized block, the way they create, the way they build up, I think he'll get all of that sorted. They have good players for it. He has good systems for it. But his success at Liverpool will boil down to whether he's able to solve this issue in with a combination of players and tactics.
Yeah, absolutely agree with you on that. And I guess for interest of time, just let's round it off with like one final point, which I'll say, which is that the one point I'm maybe a bit iffy about from what you said is like the level of commonality of this issue. So I mean, clearly looking at the stats, like it's clearly a common issue. But so using your method, actually, you said in terms of SCA allowed, like SCA against from take-ons, Liverpool were like somewhere around like the worst, right? Or mid-table. But with Feyenoord, in terms of SCA allowed from take-ons, they are, I mean, the second lowest. So basically second best.
I'm just going to read this as the opponents don't have that.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, yeah. Obviously we have to caveat this with Eredivisie tax, which is, obviously.
So then this is exactly the difference. The Premier League has that quality. Like even the bottom six teams have that one winger or that one midfielder who's really good at breaking through on transition. And they,
I mean, we see that against Manchester City even, right? Like even exactly. They have these tough games against relegation battlers. But what I think this does highlight though is that even without all these take-on SCAs, which are generally transition, like you said, the fact that Feyenoord are still mid-table in terms of chance quality allowed, to me highlights the press issue as well, in that they're getting played through, they're getting passed through, and they're conceding chances in like, you know, settled attacking moves, basically, not even like the what we call artificial transition type chances. And again, this also does tie into the like player profile issue, because even with Feyenoord, they don't really have a pure number six this season, similar to Liverpool. And actually, this is why we were thinking of even doing a section where we're like, are there any players he should take? But then we both said, this is like the big profile Liverpool need and they don't have it. So again, there is maybe a common causality of the issues. But at Feyenoord, it's like slightly different in the sense that these stats show that it's also coming from just getting played through pressure. And when you combine those two things, like that plus, like again, counter-attacking and team quality not being the best in the Eredivisie, so you're not sure about how good the rest defense exactly is. I think, yeah, in both cases, you could see these, both of these, like they're similar, but there's different issues popping up for Slot at Liverpool. So I completely with you in the sense that everything else I expect to be fine. He'll do well, maybe even pretty quickly. This is what really decides how well he will do. And I think for me, the best, I don't really see converting Alexis McAllister into this pure six as the best way forward. For me, I think the best solution is recruitment, to be honest. And I think with Michael Edwards coming back, I mean, he will surely, based on his previous track record, he will surely identify the need for this type of player. And so if they get a really good player in that position, I think that issue might also quickly not look so big as well. So yeah, I mean, I think that's a big thing that remains to be seen. And I guess it'll be interesting. But I think to conclude, on the whole, we can say that this is looking a very positive and smart appointment in circumstances and in their context for Liverpool. One of the best ones we could think of, probably. So yeah, I guess the overall outlook definitely is positive. Yeah, and unless you have anything to add, let's round off the episode. Thank you very much for listening, everyone. You can find both of us on Twitter. I'm at @ShailatNeil. Varun runs the @TheDevilsDNA account. And if you go to the @GetFootballEU account, you will find in the bio the links to all our country and league-specific accounts, which you can follow to be updated with all that's going on in the world of football, and especially in Europe, as the seasons draw to a close, titles are decided, relegations are decided, all sorts is going on. So do keep an eye out on that. You can find all those links in like the description or notes of this episode as well, depending on where you're listening. And if your app allows it, please do rate the podcast and give us a 5-star review if you enjoyed it. And of course, feel free to share with your friends and on social media as well if you found this interesting. But thank you very much for listening. We'll be back once again next week. But take care until then. Bye-bye.